Hello, everyone, and welcome to a new episode of She's the Barista. Ja, hallo. It's very great to have you back, and hello to everyone who is listening for the first time. This podcast is kindly supported by Rancilio Germany. Thank you so much for making this possible. And today I am very proud to say that I can release an episode that has a guest that I really didn't know before, as before the podcast. And just from seeing her on conventions and realizing her great career, I've got the guts to ask her to do this interview with me. And I think after that, I can say that I would consider her as one of my favorite coffee friends. She is a 3-time SCA UK Cup Tasters champion and just published a book. And she's driven and kind, and she's a real inspiration. So let's welcome her. And here she is. Hello, Frieda.
Hello.
Hi, hello. It's so great to have you. How are you?
Yeah, I'm good, thank you. Thank you for having me.
Oh, I'm very, very welcome. So for our listeners, I think we should just dive right into it. I've explained a little bit who you are already in the introduction. And yeah, I just want to ask, how are you in the moment and where are you and what are you currently doing?
Okay, so I'm in London at the moment. That's where my office is based. So I work for Origin Coffee Roasters and I'm the head of coffee. But I'm originally from Taiwan and I've been in London for 9 years. So that's right now, London is my home. I've been doing well, just got back from a holiday and I was competing in Milan and travel for work as well. So it's been hectic. And finally, I got back to work officially. And it's been great, still busy because I'm already planning for next year's coffee. So yeah.
That's great. What do you do as a head of coffee in a roastery?
Everything really. It's a really broad title. But I buy coffee for Origin Coffee. I'm a green coffee buyer. Mm-hmm. I also curating events with our educational managers. Mm-hmm. And work along with our wholesale teams to provide our customer bespoke coffees. Also, I am the one who maintain relationship and then explore, develop new relationships from coffee producing countries.
So do you travel to the countries as well?
Yeah, I do.
Oh, a lot. Oh, so jealous.
No, my first year, I traveled to, I think, 11 to 12 coffee producing countries. It's a lot. Everyone think, oh, it's so beautiful. What a great job. But it's tiring. I can tell you it's really tiring.
Mm. I can imagine. And so you visit all of the farms and then you cup the coffee right there? Or how does it work?
Yeah, so it depends on which countries. For example, like Kenya or African, mostly I cup over there. Central, we have really good relationship with the producers. So I mostly visit, cup there as well, but confirm the coffee when I go back to UK. Mostly varies, but I would cup in the origin first and then recup the coffee again back in London because, of course, the water quality is a bit different. Mm-hmm. So I always confirm once I got back home.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So do you take a little roaster with you and do you roast at the farm or?
No, so basically most of the producers or our exporting partners, they all have their own like sample roasters. So they always roast for me and I'll just have to taste it when I arrive.
Mm-hmm. And I think we said the word cupping now quite a lot of times. Can you maybe explain what that means and how you do it?
Yeah, so cupping is a sort of like a protocol and a format for coffee tasting. And for me, particularly as a green coffee buyer, That means it's my first access to how's the coffee quality. And so we will go through like smelling the dry roasted coffee, and then we pour water in, and then we'll taste the coffee quality and decide whether this coffee is up to my standard and which coffee works best for my espresso or for my Omni filter roast.
So, do you tell the people beforehand how the roast profile is supposed to be set, or do you send it? Or because I can imagine like different countries have different profiles, and you, as the person who's trying these coffees, and then sometimes probably have to look over a lot of the roasting, I guess.
So a majority of the time they all roast medium roast, because for cupping protocol there is a certain degree of how the coffee should be roasting. So the standard are all very similar. And once I cup the coffee, I still would communicate with the producers or the exporters about how the roast I prefer, so we can change on that.
And is it more good coffee, or do you usually go to these origins and are prepared to taste a lot of mediocre coffee or bad coffee? Or when do you decide, like, this is one good coffee, or there's so many good coffees, I'll take them all, or what's the percentage?
I wish I can take them all. It depends on countries again. For example, if like Central America, we have really good relationship with the producers. And before I cup the coffee, I already send them what coffee I want to buy. And these coffees are sort of like return buying. So we have been buying the coffee maybe for 5 to 10 years, so it's the same coffee over and over again. So I don't really have to cup through all different coffees. I just tell them this what I'm this this are the coffees that I want, similar as previous year, but maybe volume is a bit more or less. And then they would get the coffee ready for me. And however, in Kenya it's a bit different. So Kenyan coffee, it's more like I will visit the exporters in Nairobi, and then sometimes we will cup 400 coffees a day,
Oh
because
my God.
the quality is various, so you can't say I want this is this. It's more like you go there and you taste it when you visit. But once I create a better maybe relationship with the exporters, I can tell them what we're looking for. But when you first dip into Kenya, sometimes also the quality varies each year. So it depends on the sourcing structure as well. So Kenyan or African coffee sometimes is a bit different than established coffee origins.
So is the thing that you do is this, so you go to the farm, you decide which coffee you want. Would this classify as direct trade, or do you still work with like a lot of exporters and
Again, depends
importers?
on different coffee. So like El Salvador and Nicaragua, coffee is direct trade for us. We basically has been working with the producers for more than 7 to 10 years now. And then I negotiate the pricing and the volume directly with the producers. And then sometimes we even bring customer to the producer's house and their farms to visit. And so that's a direct relationship. But some other countries is harder. For example, maybe Africa is the hardest place to establish direct trade the direct trade relationship. And so I go through exporting company.
Why is that? Why is it so hard?
I think it's a culture. Also the lot number. No, not lot number, but the volume is different. So, for example, Central America or South America producers, they all own bigger hectares of farms, right? And they have their own process facilities. where they can dry their own coffee, and they can control their lots, they can control their drying process, whatever. And they know how much coffee trees they planted, and they know their volume. But for Africa, it's a bit different because the coffee farmers, I call them farmers, not producers, because when I say producers, it's more that they dry their coffee, they depulp their own coffee, and they dry it. But in Africa, there are more coffee farmers, means that they have their own coffee trees, maybe in their backyard or maybe in the wild. They pick the coffee, but they have to sell the coffee cherries to the washing station.
Is
And
this so-called cooperative coffee? Is this what
yeah,
would classify this?
cooperative washing station, however you call it. But then the coffee farmers has to sell the coffees to the washing station, and then the washing stations will produce. That means they depulp the coffee, they dry the coffee for the coffee farmers. And African coffees are more like a collective lots. And
Because the farms are so small, or
correct.
the backyards, yeah.
Yeah, correct. So it is harder to really, have a bigger farm and then buy directly from the producers. Even though now I know in Ethiopia and some other, like maybe Kenya, is possible, but still it is a really like minor examples.
And we talk a lot about like African coffees and about Central to South American coffees. What do you feel or what do you think about coffees from Indonesia or Asian countries?
A very good question. I personally love it because it's my trade, my culture. I like coffee personally, that's unconventional, that's they are underdogs. So when I say underdogs, potentially would be Indonesian coffee and Chinese coffee. And Indonesian coffee, most of the people would think, oh, they're all wet hole and then the coffees are not clean. But there are more and more exporters are exploring clean, washed processed coffee, similar to Central and South American process. And so it brought brighter acidity and then cleaner profile to Indonesian coffee, which I really enjoy. And I don't like the fact that people like to have preconception about, oh, this country, the coffee is bad, and then therefore they don't want to try it. And I'm more up for the challenge of, I want to bring you the best, the cleanest, the most delicious Indonesian coffee I could ever find to people, so I can break their preconception of it. Chinese coffee is very similar. Most of the coffees are from Kati are Katimo variety. And that's for people, they think, oh, that the best coffee might be like 85 cup score. But then if you process it in naturally processed coffee, it actually will increase more of the cup scores and more floral to the coffee profile itself. So also I speak the language as well. So I visited the coffee farm and also brought, I mean, sort of purchased a lot of Chinese coffee for origin to showcase this like unique and rare coffee producing country.
Interesting. The region is probably mostly Yunnan, right?
Yeah, it's very close to Yunnan in China, like a border with Myanmar and Thailand. That's west country.
That's super interesting because the only coffees that I had from like this area that I thought were good were all like the more modern anaerobe or carbonic maceration coffees because it is kind of hard to control the fermentation there from because it's not culturally so ingrained, or at least that's my what I guess from all the way over here. So what I realize is that once you use a modern fermentation technique like an anaerobe fermentation, their cup score will improve by at least 5 points, which is amazing. But what do you, as a professional cupper, think about all of those new and modern, different kinds of modulating flavor by fermentation?
I think it's actually two separate. I want to separate into two sections. So, firstly, you're right, the cup score would be higher in general. But then whether coffee producers has the money and then the equipment to process this high volume or low volume coffee, and then forget about how they can actually produce 83 more volume coffee to make more money than focusing on smaller lots. So that's my first thought opinion on that one. I have a lot of coffee producers come to me. What do you think about anaerobic? Should we do it? But I think it is hard for me to ask them to do it because who am I to tell them you should buy this and then you should create this coffee? But if I don't like it, I'm not gonna buy it. You know, there is sometimes a gap of that. So I would just tell them, I think you should trying to make a foundation, like a really, really good solid process for your general coffee so you can have more income with more volume. With the smaller lots, you can maybe once you create more profit, you can try to invest that. But I think to jumping directly to anaerobic or maceration process would be a big investment for normal coffee producers. And I think that's hard to achieve in the beginning.
Do you think it makes sense for the farmer to then ask the person who's interested to pre-invest? I think there's a couple of worldwide known farms already that only sell you the coffee if you already finance the next year's crop. You know what I mean? So do
Do
you
you
think
mean pre-finance from the roasters?
so if you buy, for example, a competition lot or a very expensive lot, you are not just buying this year's lot, but you are already paying half of next year's harvest.
Right. You mean like giving them the mindset of doing that?
Yeah, and already the money support.
Yeah, but my question is, what if they couldn't reach the standard
Well,
of the
then you
competition?
have to pay it anyway.
You mean the
It's a
customer will
risk.
have to pay, right?
Yeah, it's
Yeah.
showing the far it's also showing the Europeans most of the
Commitment.
times or Americans that buying coffee can be a risk, such as farming coffee, to make
100%.
everything. Yeah.
I feel risk is something that the customer, which means the roasters, needs to work to go together with the producers. But I think we shouldn't keep encourage we to what extent we should not encourage them too much because sometimes, you know, I mean, this is also in life when we are so focused on something that's so new, we forgot what we are truly should be doing. And I feel like if a producer has really much interesting experimental mindset and they're happy to do it and have the money to do it, just you can I'm happy to tell them to do it, you know, and then they can have fun with whatever they want because they might have more coffee to lose, right? To maybe just, you know, those coffee probably they won't be able to sell it, but they can have fun with it. But what if other producers doesn't really have much production to maneuver? And then I think they will also put so much effort on producing the experimental coffee, then forget about they can actually make more money from the bigger volume of their normal quality coffee. That's just my personal view because I buy a lot of coffee. I normally buy 21 containers a year. And I personally don't focus on smaller, like competition lots, even though I do. I buy the best competition lots I can, but I think because of the percentage of the world are mostly tasting lower quality coffee comparing to higher priced coffee, I would want the producer to focus on more of what they're very normally very good at. But that's my personal view.
So make just a really, really, really good washed and a really good natural. And if you have the capacity, go crazy with the modern stuff and try something out. Yeah.
Yeah,
Do you
100%.
think the trend is going to go back to washed or not? Or because I feel like there's been such a huge move to naturals, heavy naturals, anaerobe, carbonic maceration. Do you think it's going to go back soon?
That actually sort of brought me back to my second opinion about asking producers to do anaerobic and also maceration because I think we were so focused on this particular experiment lots that we ignore the fact that the coffee actually was over fermented, that we killed the embryo from the green coffee, that the coffee tasted more cacao and winey. Instead of keeping the embryo alive, that the coffee tasted more lively. So in my personal preference, I prefer to have coffee that is more clean washed or maybe funky natural. But I would sort of drive away from over fermented anaerobic and maceration.
It is really, really interesting because obviously we've both met in Milan and I tried a couple of the Brewers Cup coffees and they were very, very heavy and they're very, very fermented. And yeah, I also see that the trend might go back to just having like a really high quality, sparkly, bright acidity coffee. Yeah. It's so interesting to chat to you about
Yeah.
that stuff.
You asked a lot of interesting questions. I love it.
Maybe before we dive deeper into all of this really advanced coffee talk, maybe you can tell our listeners a little bit more about how you started in coffee, what happened, why you came to the UK, what your journey was so far.
I've been always working in hospitality. But other than that, 2 years I worked for a manufacturers that produce jacket in Taiwan. So I went to Australia actually a long time ago. I did working holiday visa in Melbourne, and I work in a cafe. I love the cafe culture in Australia.
That's great.
Yeah, I love it. I love the brunch culture. I love how friendly everyone was, and then how everyone got together because of the cafe. And I didn't know how to make coffee by then, but I was a really skillful waitress. When I went home to Taiwan, I had a thought like I want to open cafes. I didn't want to, work for anyone anymore, but I didn't know how to make coffee. And I was dying to get out of Taiwan. So I applied working holiday visa in UK. And luckily I got it. And then I came to London 9 years ago. I worked for a cafe as a barista. That's my first like coffee knowledge ever started. As a barista for Taylor Street Baristas, which was a pioneer cafe in London, actually. And the owners are from Australia. So I worked there. That's how all my coffee knowledge started. And I wanted to stay in London because I love how convenient it is. I can travel to Berlin, I can travel to like Denmark, everywhere in Europe within 2 hours mark. And then I just wanted to stay in London, but I need a visa. So I studied in London for 2 years and then looked for a job for sponsorship visa. And then luckily, Caravan Coffee Roasters hired me and offered me a visa. And then now I work for Origin. Origin also offering me sponsorship visa at the moment.
Is it more difficult now with the Brexit, or is it?
Oh, not really, actually. I don't know for me because I'm not European, but I think the process was fairly easy anyway because now Brexit, they want more like foreign talent to come over rather than European, it's funny. But getting a coffee sponsorship is harder because it's like hospitality and you can get any baristas from locally. And so it, or in the roastery, they can hire anyone, because that sometimes roastery job is more like physical and you can just hire someone locally. And so getting, sorry.
And they do have to pay extra for sponsoring a visa, right?
Yeah, correct.
Yeah. lucky that you're so skilled. I mean, who wouldn't want to pay
Yeah,
for
I know,
this?
right? I was gonna go home if I didn't get any sponsorship and not work in coffee anymore. That was my plan.
Oh my God,
Because
no.
it was so hard.
It would have been such a waste for the coffee industry.
Thanks. It didn't happen.
Yeah, so it's always really interesting to hear from like people all over the world because Europe is such a melting pot and people from all over the world do work here. And I meet people and they just say it's so easy to stay here. And then especially in Berlin, because we both lived in Australia and I have quite a lot of Australian friends as well. And they're like, it's so hard to get a visa for Germany or the sponsorship, especially because yeah, it's quite expensive. Same other way around though. For me in Australia, working there, I could only work there on a work and holiday visa. And then, I mean, I'm married now and still couldn't live in Australia. I think like
Really?
yeah, I think a partner visa is about $8,000. And I'm just like,
What? Oh my God.
yeah, it's crazy.
I guess it's cheaper to get a European spouse visa.
Yeah, I mean, that's what my husband is on now.
No.
Yeah, but very, very good to have you in Europe. Very good that you're a fixed contractor here.
Thank
And
you.
that you're improving coffee quality for all of us. And I think now it's time to talk about competition. So I remember the first time I saw you, and that was 2017, and I was in Budapest.
No way.
And I think there was Cup Tasters, Latte Art, Coffee in Good Spirits, and Ibrik, and you were screaming on stage.
As
And
usual, I still do.
yeah, usually when you see Cup Tasters, they're all like really focused, really quiet, usually also very shy people. And that's why they do Cup Tasters, because you don't have to talk. And you were just so full of energy. Was this your first time you competed, or was this already long way down?
2017 was my first time I ever competed.
And you placed what again?
I placed third.
In the world. That is incredible. Can you tell us a little bit more about why you decided to compete, and what was your journey, and how do you already place third in the world for the first time competing? It's crazy.
I think so before I went to the UK national one, that was my first. I was student by then, but then I was working for Caravan as a production assistant part-time. And I was sort of like mingle with Caravan so they can get me a visa and get me on part-time. So I was, wasn't cupping a lot of coffee, but I joined their production cupping. So that's how I trained for my first national championship. I didn't really have much thoughts about I want to win. It's more like I'm entering to test myself to see how did I go, how am I doing, and that's it. And I didn't have much expectation of anything, but then I won, surprisingly. Yeah.
Can you maybe quickly explain the rules of
Yeah.
the competition? So, what do you have to do, and how can you train for this?
Yeah, so basically, Cup Taster is a competition, and it's ma very make a lot of people nervous because it's like we have to stand on stage and doing a lot of things at once, and then there will be a table with eight sets of coffee, and each set has three cups, and two cups of coffee are identical, and the other one is the odd one. So the competitors need to taste all three cups of coffee and decide which coffee is the odd one, and we need to move the coffee out. And eventually the competition is about accuracy and also speed. So if, for example, you got seven cups out and I got six cups, and then I'm faster than you for my time, you win because you got seven out. And if we both got seven out and I finish by 3 minutes and you finish by 5 minutes, and that means I win. So it is a really interesting competition that there's no judges at all, and you will get the results straight away. So I have to have a, we all have to have a big heart to accept the results straight away. And what I found was my, one of my sort of like trick in the beginning when I first competed, the first time ever, was I realized that everyone was nervous anyway. And so that gave me a lot of like realization of, okay, so we're all nervous, and if I can conquer that, I'm already at a better step forward. And so I did some technique of meditation or breath work to relax myself. And then that's sort of like helped me in between the competition and then move me forward.
So it's a lot about being mindful, being calm and collected. And I think what I understood is also that the changes between the sets of coffee are so minimal. Like sometimes they use the same coffee but different amount of water in one cup, right?
I think they will keep the ratio the same,
Ah, okay.
but maybe different day lot from the
Oh.
same farm.
Oh my God. That's
Or
even harder. Oh God.
or maybe
Different
the tree.
altitude.
Maybe the tree from here to 100 or 200 meters away, something like that.
Wow. Oh God, I can't even. Yeah. This is incredibly hard. And you train with hand brew or with batch brew?
Batch brew.
Batch brew.
I trained as a competition style, basically.
Yeah, and the competition brewers are in the moment still Mokka Master, right? Yeah, so for everyone who wants to train, organize a Mokka Master and make lots of batches from the same coffee. And I think what Daniel Horvath told me one time is he tasted like really dark roasts to like get used to also look, because it's easier, he said it's easier to differentiate really good roasts, but if you can differentiate really bad roasts, then it's like better for your taste. Is that true?
Everyone's different. So for me, it's easier to identify bad roast because I can tell the roast defect. So I think everyone trained differently. And for me, because my previous job at Caravan was quality control and I look for defect in roasted coffee, so it's easier for me to tell the differences.
Yeah, I can imagine. And so that was your first time competing, and then that was definitely not your last time. What happened then?
What happened then is I competed the second time
Mm,
and
that was
I won.
which year?
This was 2018.
And where was the worlds?
And the worlds, I was in Brazil. I didn't get through the semi-final, I think. And it was a big shock to me, or because I was so committed. And then because I prepare more the second time than the first time, because the first time was just like, oh, I'm gonna try no matter what, doesn't matter if it's good or bad, and I will see how it goes, right? So less expectation. Second time was, oh, I was so close to the winner. I wanna win, I'm the winner already, you know. So I have more expectation on it, which leads me to more bigger heartbreak when I didn't
Yeah.
get through.
I know
And
the
yeah, I'm sure you understand because it's always like that, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, so I didn't get through. My third competition was actually 2020 because while I was competing 2018 Worlds, the UK is competing 2019 Championship. So I couldn't participate.
Ah, okay.
Yeah. And so 2020 I won again, and which is this year.
Yeah, because then COVID hit and then it got postponed to Milan. So that was your third time on the world stage, correct? And you placed fifth in the world this time.
Yes.
And it's amazing. Seriously, it's the only thing that's really annoying is they only make four trophies. So annoying.
I was really upset at the beginning because I also did pretty well for the semi-final round.
You were the fastest at the first round, right?
Yeah, but it doesn't matter. Every round is a new competition. I say I love it so much because every time it's a new person, every time is a new game. And so my previous round doesn't really matter. I just need to get through. And I feel that I actually personally was super happy when I got through semi-final because I sort of conquered the fact that I didn't get through at my second world championship. Right. So I made it through and I was so happy. But I had a lot of manifestation on I wanted to become the champion because I still, of course, had a lot of expectation on it. So when I lost, of course, I cried because I worked so hard on this. But then the very next day, I already feel so much better. The reason being, I actually had a friend text me, and I realized that even though I lost, but that doesn't mean I am a different person. And in fact, I'm the same person as I was, only I have more experience. And I feel so much better because I realized that that was just a competition and I shouldn't let it drive me down.
And in fact, you actually did the absolute opposite instead of saying, because you did not lose. You definitely did not lose. That's such a bad use of
Thank you. I appreciate that.
words. What you did instead was you so consistently inspire people because it's people like you that go on stage year after year after year, where other people that watch you are so inspired by being like, it's so great to see them again and to see you perform and to see how much passion and effort you put into it. And it's also a great way of how to present you as a woman in this work, because then people ask you, oh, so what do you do as work? And then you're telling them all the amazing things that you just told me. And I mean, that inspires me, even being like, oh my God, you do so much for people at the farms, for green coffee buying. You're so skilled. Everyone should be so happy to be working with you. And yeah, I think it's a great inspiration, and I think it's really important to tell you because I know how it feels afterwards. I mean, I didn't go to the finals by 0.4 points, and I was just like, oh God, that was so ridiculously close. But yeah, I still got messages from people that said you're so inspiring, and it's so great to see more of us girls going up there and fighting year after year after year. And it is very demotivating if we don't go through. And we're very easy on ourselves to say we lost, but we definitely did not lose.
Yeah, I appreciate that because you're right about using the correct words to communicate with ourselves. And that was my learning process of my entire training, actually. I realized I didn't recognize myself much, like not just for the competition, but for most of the thing I do. And a lot of people keep saying it, you can tell me this now, or other people keep telling me, oh, Frida, you're amazing, whatever. But I've never really given myself credit until when I started to train. I learned a lot of, I did a lot of self-searching during the training, actually. And it helps me to push forward that I have more confidence about myself and giving myself more credits that it took me a day to. Or even one evening to resolve the fact that, oh, I got fifth. It's okay. It's great. And I did so much more. And then there's more, so much more to come as well.
Absolutely. Do you think, like, because I know this feeling, you know this feeling, do you think it is a very female trait that we have, that we, I don't know, talk us ourselves down, or that we don't really see the things that we've already achieved. And yeah, what do you think about that?
I think definitely more female has this trait, but it doesn't mean some guys I've met that they have they that they are more like positive than than us in general. So I think it's more like a human trait.
It's a human trait. How do
Yeah,
we
but
can
then like we sometimes insecure about ourselves with and we can use so many different ways to sort of like behave,
How can we overcome this? How can we go past this?
Oh my God, this is a big question. I guess it's more like loving ourselves more, which I'm still learning every day, every minute, every decision we made. How can we make it? How could we feel more comfortable with our decision and then with our behavior? And I think that definitely, for me personally, is going through, bulimia and depression and understanding that, okay, so my past behavior was because of my previous experience that built up my personal perspective that I reflected to the world, but I don't have to behave that way. And then the more I give myself love, the more I love myself, the more I give myself recognition and understanding that I am enough, and that helped me to become more positive and shifting my mindset and perspective to be a better and happier person.
And is this also something that inspires you to go on stage again?
Do you mean in the future?
Because I hope you will.
I remember we had a chat on Instagram, and then I say I probably won't compete. I don't know, because I feel like there's a lot of energy pouring to this competition. And luckily, I choose the cup tasting. All I have to prepare, is one spoon. But other than one spoon, I need to prepare my mindset, my brain, my psychological side, and then also like physical side of it. So I think for me, cup taster is like actually really fun because I can be a better version of myself before competing. So I was eating vegetarian food before I compete. I didn't drink coffee or alcohol.
Crazy.
Yeah, I know.
Both crazy.
And I feel so much better, to be fair.
Yeah. I
Yeah.
think that's the vegetarian.
But I think, I don't know, in the future, maybe if I sourced a really good coffee that I want to represent the coffee producers. But I feel like I'm gonna say something that you might sound negative. But I feel like I'm less innovative and creative comparing to all the baristas and also brewers, because you always bring a lot of ideas. And my ideas are great, but it's more like operational sourcing side of ideas. I'm very creative in that side, but I'm not creative at baristering and then brewing.
But you know what? It's not about I'm only good at this, I'm only good at that. I mean, I'm a very exception because I very rarely I don't really have trainers, but the talks that I've had so far on my podcast even are having one thing in common, and that is that you're not alone on this stage. Usually you search for people that have what you're lacking, so you can find a trainer, you usually have an amazing team, and this is where you can use your skill, which is definitely the most important when you are competing, and it is sourcing coffee. So if you're standing there with a coffee that you know everything about and it's so important for you, then you will have a great team around you and then you will succeed. I don't think you have to be good at everything and you have to be like the best latte artist to be in a barista competition. Absolutely not. If you're the best latte artist, go into the latte art competition. But yeah. I think just go for it and try it, because your first time that you've ever done cup tasters, you got the experience that you really succeeded, and who tells you that it's not going to be the same when you do barista or brewers?
I
And every
appreciate that.
time I do a new competition, I do surprisingly well.
Yeah, I think I'm this at this stage, I quite enjoy coaching. So I was actually coaching my teammates who was training me at Cup Taster. So I was training him for Aeropress Championship, and he actually won the England UK England Aeropress Championship.
Amazing. I should have had you as a coach for my compulsory.
Let me know next time, because I actually quite enjoy doing that. And I also, for tasting wise, like I'm actually I was helping Dan Fallow as well for his routines for tasting particularly, and I'm actually quite enjoyed that process of tasting through stuff. So
Right,
yeah,
yeah.
I think maybe that could be my next step, or we'll see.
I might come back. I might come back on this. I'm gonna give you a call and be like, I can't taste anything anymore. Talking about tasting, you have released a book, and I actually have this book at home, and you wrote it about coffee sensory, and I'm amazed about how accurate and how easy to read it is. And first of all, congratulations on like publishing your book. That's a big, big, huge step. What inspired you to write this book, and what's the feedback you've gotten so far?
Yeah, so Sip and Slurp, A Guide to Expert Coffee Tasting, is my COVID baby.
Yay!
So, what inspired me was when I reached my second win of the UK National. I was so obsessed with winning, you know, and suddenly I reached that level, but I felt lost because I didn't know what life could be other than competing. Because every moment of my life was training, was thinking about competition. And at that point, I reached a level like, I don't know what am I doing, because I can't share with other people, or maybe I shared with other people, but I don't feel fulfilled. And now I learned fulfilling ourselves doesn't come to outside from outside world, but come within. So I have a friend suggested, why don't you write about your experience of tasting? Because I've already won 2 times. And I thought, who would be interesting to read about the book? But
Everyone.
then I did a bit research and I realized there are many coffee roasting and brewing or baristering or coffee origin books, but not many tasting books. And mostly because I was at AST before, and mostly the sensory books are more academic. And I remember when I first started baristering, I was asking a senior barista, how do you taste coffee? How do I increase my sensory skills? And the answer was always, oh, you just have to taste more. And yes, it was a great suggestion, and I got so far from that suggestion, but I feel that was just like one way through, and I learned, because through my recovery from depression, I learned that there's so much other ways to increase and develop our sensory skills. And I found a missing link in between being able to taste coffee and speaking out loud, and also accurate about how we experience and how we taste. And therefore, I thought, okay, I'm just gonna write my personal experience. And there's like also sometimes when I read a coffee book, I have so many coffee books at home, but I never really read it through because sometimes it's just really hard to read through because I'm not from like English native country, right? And so I thought I'm just gonna write it really plainly, and it's more like people are talking to me and listening to me, and I would just talk through the process. And then that's, yeah, And then I produced the books during COVID, and now it's been selling internationally, and it's great.
And I can only recommend it to everyone. I think I've messaged you one day after I got the book because I could read it anywhere in one day. And me also being not a native English speaker, it was so pleasant to just read a book that I can read easily and understand
I
easily.
can feel you. Yeah, I can feel
Oh,
you. That's so funny. Yeah.
I just bought another book and it is quoting Einstein, and I'm like, oh God, so lost, so lost. But yeah, it's a great book, and it takes you on this journey about your senses and about how important it is to hear, to feel, to see. So it's really incorporating all of the other senses and all of the other things that you, yeah, that impact your taste and your flavor. And I love all of the little what do you experiments that
Yeah.
you raise
Did
in
you
stuff.
try
Yes, it's great.
it? What's your favorite one?
My favorite one is the one with the gummy bears because that's something that I can just show people so easily.
Yeah.
So can you explain the experiment quickly?
Yeah, so basically it's about when we taste coffee, actually 80% of the tasting is go through the back of our nose instead of our mouth. So basically, we ha have to pinch our nose and then taste a gummy bear. And when we pinched our nose, all we can taste was base five basic tastes. So maybe gummy bear is sweet. That's it. And we can taste the intensity of the sweetness. But then when we release our nose, the aroma will travel from the back of our nose internally and then release more flavor and our aroma, and then that's how we identify the flavor of the gummy bear or maybe the flavor of the coffee.
I loved it. It's so easy, and it's just so approachable for everyone else. Yeah, everyone, please buy this book. It's amazing.
Oh, thank you. My initial idea was exactly like what my initial idea is I want it to be so friendly, so easy to read that people can read it on the bus. And that's exactly what your reaction was, exactly what I wanted.
Yeah, and it's yeah, it one of the very few coffee books where I'm just like happy to just give it to everyone and be like, yeah, you should read it. It's going to improve your knowledge, it's going to improve your taste, but it's not going to give you a headache because it's so difficult.
Yeah.
I want to ask you, because you're cupping all the time, is there something that you would advise everyone to consider when they're cupping? I mean, is there a special temperature that they should do? Is there a special this, special that? Is it easier to cup hot coffees or is it easier to cup cold coffees? What do you think?
For my personal experience and then understanding, also written a book, I realized we are all different and how we accept the temperature of the coffee and how we are good at receiving the flavor or aroma are so different. And I personally very good at tasting, like putting coffee in my mouth, but I'm not very good at smelling. I know some people are more developed their nose comparing to tasting. So when we go through the tasting, we should understand firstly ourselves what we are good at and trusting our and then being confident about our skills. And then go through the cupping. I will smell first, but I won't be sure. And then I will use tasting to confirm my smell and then going through different temperature. My personal preference used to be 70 degree, like really high temperature. But then throughout ages or different year, I actually prefer lower temperature than the hotter temperature now. So this is like everyone's different. You can train to taste hotter coffee as well. And also sometimes as women, our hormones changes all the time, and that also affects our tasting ability. So there are many variables. So I think what I'm trying to say is we should understand ourselves more to costume, what should we go for when tasting?
If you set up a cupping, what's the parameters that you always do? How many grams, how much water, and what's the degrees for like a regular cupping?
So for me, it will be 11 grams for the cupping, and I think the water is 200 mils or 180, I can't remember. And the water temperature will be 100 because I always set up to boil.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, that's how do you say that? How Origin cups anyway, because they don't have temperature control.
Yeah, right, yeah.
And then the water, our water setting is roughly like 190 to 170 ppm from the
That's good to know.
filters. Everyone's different. You just have to understand your setup and then just
Yeah.
keep running whatever your basic default setup.
How important is filtering the water?
For me personally, it's very important for work because sometimes really hard water like London tap water, you under extract a lot of things because there's too much buffer or mineral in the water, so you can't taste the true coffee aspect. So being able to filter the water, I can easily identify the attributes of coffee. But that being said, it's mostly for QC work because there's no way I can control every household's water quality in UK or the world. So that's something that for me, the biggest can of worm for my work.
Yeah, I always explain to people if they only use tap water, because also Berlin is super, super hard. There's already so much minerals and hardness in the water that it's full, I say. It's like it's full up to 90%. And then your water can actually only take 10% of the actual coffee flavor. And this is why it's so under extracted. And this is what you've exactly said. What kind of filter would you use for a normal household?
There are plenty of options actually. So there are like filtered jugs that you can use. And I know one of the good one for specialty would be the one called Peak at my house, because the house is my partner owns the house, so we can change our filter through the tab. So we use BWT,
Nice.
or you can use Brita as well. They have this setup. So basically, you just have to change the tap in your kitchen, and it can connect it to the filtered cartridges that most of the cafes are using here in UK, or maybe in Berlin as well. It's not expensive at all, but then you can have really good filtered water drinking, but also brewing coffee as well.
And also cooking, like you will taste the difference when you cook something with filtered water. It's so interesting. It's so impressive.
And I've heard you can do that for your plants as well. It's better to go through filter water
Yeah, exactly.
for
Because
plants.
also they are hungry and they don't want water that is completely full. I have another question for you, and that is if you have anyone who inspires you, or if you have a mentor or anyone like this who was a big part on your journey, or would you like to have one or anything? Yeah, anything like that.
That's a very good question. I think my mentor is like periodically, like going through different classes, my life, perspective changes, and then my idea shapes because of how people, how they share their opinions. For me right now, because I'm working towards to spiritual side of spectrums, so I'm a big fan of Peter Crohn, who is he's called Mind Architect, and he helped me to change my mindset towards everything in life, and I'm very grateful. Before that, my coffee mentor or inspiration was Annette. Annette, she used to work for Square Mile as a coffee buyer.
Is Annette the one who also wrote the book from Square Mile?
She is a coffee buyer for Square Mile, and she's so talented, but she has been so quiet. And I love her skill sets, and I also love how much she enjoy her work. But I also feel she could be more, she
Seen.
put herself, she can put more of herself out there, but I suppose she also eventually doesn't want to. I feel whatever she did was amazing, and that sort of helped me to when I probably think about some problems or situation, I will think about how would maybe Annette would do, and then what did she do beforehand. So that's my coffee mentor.
Nice. I think I have one more final question because there's a lot of young baristas or new baristas to the scene that sometimes listen to this podcast. And to me, it seems like we're struggling a little bit in the coffee sector in the moment, finding skilled and experienced baristas. And I think that's obviously due to the pandemic because people have either lost their jobs or they've decided to reorientate themselves. But how can we motivate young baristas that work in the industry to stay with us and to stay in the industry and to see that there's actual career paths?
I think in many ways, the community, we need to create more, for example, events or talks or panels and discussions to I don't know, keep the momentum going. I think what I'm trying to say is to create a community that we are open to each other, and then we are growing together. And then the more we grow together, the more we are communicating, the more beneficial we will bring in more talented people, and then help them to push them to grow.
So if people, for example, would say, I really want to chat with Freda, for example. Is there any way how they can contact you? I think you've got a website, right?
Yeah, so like through my Instagram, normally people can check me directly. But what I think, for example, UK industry, UK cafes, we used to do a lot of events. Like this was 10 years ago when I first joined the industry. And those events helped me to create and learn more ideas about how other people think, or it could just basically a cupping about how are the coffee process, how are the different coffee process that affect the cup quality, little things. But those are the events that help me learn so much about coffee tasting, and then so much about this industry. We used to have a lot of panel discussion, but I found now in UK there's less. I could because of pandemic, but could also because there was wave, like older generation have moved away from London, so there was not much of events or community going on. So that's sort of like my hope through my work from Origin, that I'm working with my team to create more events for people to join, to participate, and to learn. And I hope that it's not just from Origin, but other roasteries or maybe other cafes could, or even importers, could keep pushing this forward to create more educational contents so that everyone can learn and social, and then we can have a better higher sort of like participate rates and retention.
So maybe that's a good motivation for even just a coffee shop to do regular cuppings. And even I think the most thing that most of the coffee shops have is they set up a cupping and then maybe only one or two people come and then they get demotivated and they don't do it anymore. I think that's exactly the most important thing, because you're not doing it just for the others. You're also doing it for your own team and for your own staff, because constantly cupping and constantly trying coffees, this is how you will get better. It doesn't matter how many people come. It doesn't always have to be an event. I think the continuity, I don't know how to say it, continuously doing cuppings. Let's say like every Wednesday we're having a cupping at 6 o'clock in the evening, and we're trying different Brazil coffees, or we're trying different Central American coffees, or we're tasting only naturals or only washed, or we're tasting all of those in comparison. That is not just important for your workers and for your taste how your taste can develop. It's also super, super, super important to check on with the roasters, because they need QCing, and sometimes QCing is overlooked because not every batch gets QC'd, and cafes have the power in their hand to give feedback to roasteries, and I think that's very, very important.
Yeah, I think not just about tasting coffee, I think also more different training towards, maybe for example this week we will taste 5 different apples together, and then we taste 5 different citrus, or next month or winter, you know, like, so we can sometimes jump outside of coffee, because I think the training should be a coffee oriented, but then like for sensory we should jump outside of the box, so then we can make the training more fun, or more fun, because you know, like we both work in coffee industry for so long, sometimes you can just get really tired of tasting coffee. Sometimes I don't care about anyone talk about the machine, your ratio, it's just coffee, stop. But when I do more tasting, like apples, or you know, different chocolate, you know, wine, I get more excited, because in a way it's sharpening my sensory as well. But a way for me to disconnect with coffee.
That's such a good inspiration. That's such a great idea to just say like, okay, let's have 10 different apples and let's try them all.
I bet people love it.
Yeah, that's
well,
amazing.
You don't have to have 10 different alcohols, but maybe two. I mean, yes, okay, 10 different alcohol, but it's all rum.
It's obviously all.
Well, like all same type of alcohol.
Yeah.
Category, and then maybe different country or same country, you know, make it more like you're tasting coffee, but then the liqueur itself is different.
I think I have one more question. How important is it to write things down? Because that's a trick that I use, or that I used to do, because my sensory was not great. I think I only developed like a really good sense of taste and of cupping since the last 3 years. And what helped me a lot was writing everything down. Do you think like having a cupping journal is important, or how do you approach this? Did you do that as well?
Yes, when I first started, but I never kept a record. But maybe that's something I'm missing. But I can tell you, this is what I've learned last year, actually, from, his name is Jim Quick, and he taught me how to learn. And he taught me about how to learn about myself and what I'm really good at through learning process. For example, I learned that I'm a kinesthetic learner. That means I have to learn through making things. I need to learn through touching things. And my weakness is listening. And so my seeing, my sight, and reading or whatever is the middle bit. So for me, I learned that through talking about motions, through talking about touching or texture, that helped me to remember my tasting more, or color.
Wow. Okay.
You know, that actually was the chapter 7 I'm talking about about crossing senses. Because in a way, when I read or listen, I sometimes not remembering it, but through touching or other enhancement, I can learn so much more and memorize it more. And so I think my answer to your question is we all have different way of learning and preference, and then maybe my way of learning is not your way, but eventually, if we understand ourselves more, we can use those techniques of learning to reinforce our memories and our senses development. I hope
Nice.
that makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I think that's a beautiful last question for me to have said and for
Are you sure
you.
this is the last?
I think so. I just realized that. I mean, we could talk forever and
Yeah, I
I would
think
probably
so.
have 1,000 taste questions and everything, but we're already at over an hour. And I think that's a good time for us to wrap it up.
Yeah.
Freda, it's been amazing. We've talked so much about origin, about processing, about
Yeah.
cupping, about competition, and about self-worth, which I think is very, very important for us to talk about because it's something everyone struggles with and no one really wants to talk about. So thank you for being so open and yeah, so honest.
It's my pleasure.
And yeah, thank you so much for being on the She's the Barista podcast. I couldn't have asked for a better person to spend this last hour with. Thank you so much.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. I really enjoy your questions.
Is there anything else that you want to like advise our listeners, or if you have anything else to say for as an advice for tasting or for competing? Then you can say that now if you want to. Yeah.
People can find me through my Instagram, and it's IMFREDA. I'm Frida. You can learn more about tasting from my book, and of course, ask me any questions you want. And I want to update what's going on with my book. I'm actually translating the book into Spanish. And so I can share with coffee producers from and then so they can learn more about tasting coffee as well. And I'm working this sort of like as a social and then complementary projects. I'm funding myself to publish this Spanish book. And hopefully work with exporters or importers who, and also roasters actually, who want to contribute back to their coffee producers. And so they can purchase the book and then give away to the coffee producers.
That is amazing.
Yeah, I haven't thought about.
Do you have a GoFundMe or anything?
No, I haven't thought about how to do this properly because obviously printing English version in UK and I personally distribute to the rest of the world is easy, but if it will be more costly for the shipping from London to Central America and South America. So I at the moment I'm talking to a exporters and they will print the copy themselves and distribute internally to their own network. And that's one way of doing it. But other than that, I need to keep talking to other people how I can distribute and then share this book with other coffee producers. So that's where I'm at right now.
Okay, maybe someone's listening and maybe someone has an idea. So if one of you is a publisher
Fingers
and
crossed. Yeah.
Please contact Frida. That would be amazing.
Thank you. I
Thank
think
you so
that's it.
much.
Yeah,
Yeah, I
thank you
think
so
that's
much.
it. Yeah, I hope you're having a great time, and I'm sure I'll see you next time in Warsaw, right?
Or anytime you come to London, let
Or
me know.
anytime I come to London. Yeah.
Please. Yeah.
And otherwise, yeah, next time that the whole coffee family is going to meet up is in Warsaw in June 2022.
Yeah.
And yeah, I'm very excited. If I might see you on a different competition stage or as a trainer, I think everyone can be lucky to have you as a trainer.
Wow, thank
and
you.
That's it. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.
What a great person. And I have to tell you, I enjoyed this talk so much. And I find it incredible how skilled Frieda is. She is a true inspiration. And I'm just so happy that I had her as a guest. So thank you so much again, Frieda. And one more time, I would like to thank Rancilio Germany for making this podcast possible. And I hope you will tune in next week again for a drum roll. A German episode again. Whoop, whoop. That's right. I have invited Jana, who was the German barista representative in the World Barista Championship in Milan 2021. And we will talk about mental health and about career, and we'll talk about pressure. So make sure to tune in and tell your friends. And if you have any questions, please contact me via my website, nicolebattefeld.com. Or DM me on Instagram via nbadfeld. And until then, I wish you a very great week and thank you so much for listening.